This extract was taken from a game of chess from T.S. Eliot's poem The Wasteland. It's a description of a scene indoors. Two characters are present, but the entire thing is written in third person. It was written shortly after World War I, while Eliot was still employed in the common drudgery of his job in the bank, and this is reflected in several ways throughout the extract. There are several themes throughout the poem. Firstly, the profusion of material things and the superficial focus on them without focus on the more important things, such as love, culture, and the past. Another theme is the absence of the symbols of purity. And the third and final one is the lack of interaction within the poem and how the characters in it are trapped in a stasis. First of all, if one looks at the title of the extract, A Game of Chess, it was taken from it's an allusion to Webster's Women Beware of Women, where the guardian of a girl is distracted by a game of chess and she was therefore raped. This is once again a symbol of how people focus on the material things, such as the game, without noticing the more important things, such as the loss of innocence. The chair in the chair she sat in is capitalized, showing the higher imports of the object rather than the person herself. The soft alliteration of the chair she sat in, like a burnished throne, reflects the profusion of material things and the wealth within the scene. The entire there's enjambment throughout the entire poem, which is almost like once again, the profusion and profligacy of the scene, it flows on and does not stop. The caesuras, such as in From Satin Cases Poured in Rich Profusion, semicolon, the glitter of her jewels rose to meet it, comma, draw out the scene once more, bringing the reader's eyes to the profusion of rich imagery. There's a plethora of extravagant imagery, the nouns used, such as marble, golden, satin, jewels, ivory, all reflect the wealth within the scene. The long vowels in words such as unguent, lacquerea, wrought with fruited vines, again, draw out the scene and the sense of wealth and richness within it. The imagery in Double the Flames of Seven Branch Candelabra reflecting light upon the table, it seems as if this light is simply reflecting all the jewels that are rising to meet it. And it is a sense of this wealth being reflected again and again, and this is why people are focusing on it, although it is actually nothing. It is simply a reflection, and it is nothing tangible. The personification of the scent in Unstoppered lurked her strange synthetic perfumes, unguent, powdered, drowned the scents in odors. It gives the sense of malice of the scent, as if it is overwhelming our senses and stopping us from realizing the truth of how trapped we are within this place. The sibilance in strange synthetic perfumes highlights the sinister character of this scent and how it overwhelms our senses. The imagery in "and other withered stumps of time were told upon the walls, staring forms." This refers to tapestries and murals, and it shows how all our culture and what Eliot believes is the richness of our past has been reduced to purely aesthetic purposes. It's superficial, and people have no more appreciation for the true art. In terms of the theme of the absence of symbols of purity, one can see this once more in the title, A Game of Chess. Again, this is referring to the rape of a young girl and shows this loss of innocence, which is reflected in further on in the extract with the allusion to the rape of Philomel. The change of Philomel by the barbarous king, so rudely forced, this is a reflection of how the people that in this wasteland are satisfied with only brave cravings. This is highlighted with the word jug-jug to dirty ears. Jug-jug is meant to be an allusion to the sound a nightingale makes. However, it has crude and lewd connotations emphasized by the harsh G within the word. And this reflects the mindset, the trapped mindsets of the people within this wasteland, perhaps as seen by Eliot when he was working in his bank, the monotonous superficiality of his life. The phrase, "I think we are in Rat's Alley where the dead men lost their bones." This could be an allusion to the trenches that Eliot had lost a friend in during World War I, and it once again reflects death and despair in the wasteland. The phrase, "burnt green and orange, framed by the colored stone in which sad light the carved dolphins sang." The lugubrious colors of green and orange are not the colors of a true warm fire. There is no freedom in this fire. It is as if it is poisoned by the scent itself. And this once more reflects how the things in our life that should be free and should be warm are actually being drowned out by our material things. The imagery that could reflect freedom, such as the sylvan scene or the nightingale filling the desert with inviolable voice, is not actually real. They are simply pictures, and they're a reflection of how we may have freedom, but because of how much our senses are overwhelmed by the material things around us, we cannot recognize this as the symbol of freedom that it is. Finally, the final theme of people not having any interaction with each other can be seen by the personification of the many objects within the scene. The marble where the glass was held up, the Cupid peeped out, it hid its eyes, the flames were doubled, the light was reflected, the jewels rose, the powders lurked and drowned the scents in odors. The candle flames were fattened. This shows that the only action in the scene, the only current verbs that we can see, are that of inanimate objects. It reflects how the people in this scene do not actually interact with each other, and they're trapped in their own world, in this stasis of materialism. The further personification in leaned out, leaning, hushing, the room enclosed, footsteps shuffled on the stair, once more shows how we are trapped within this room. Everything is closing in within us. The only verbs that we can associate with the people are footsteps shuffled on the stair. Her hair glowed into words, and these verbs, shuffled and glowed, are all very passive. There's no action. The sibilance in savagely still emphasizes the malicious cutting off of words. There's a deliberate refusal to interact with each other. The speech marks, "my nerves are bad tonight." "Yes, bad. Stay with me. Speak to me. Why do you never speak? Speak." There's this sense of desperation. We can see this through the simple diction in "my nerves are bad tonight. Stay with me." The short sentences, "yes, bad. Why do you never speak?" As well as the broken syntax, such as in "what thinking? What?" This emphasizes, once again, the monotony of the wasteland, which, as mentioned before, Eliot has had first-hand knowledge in his job in the bank. The repetition in "what is that noise? What is that noise now?" shows the fear of people, that they seem to be jumping at shadows. There's no self-confidence, no belief in themselves. The progression in these short speech from asking the person to stay, asking them to speak, and then finally just asking them to think shows this desperation for any interaction, any way to break free of this wasteland. And the fact that there are no speech marks in "I think we are in Rat's Alley where the dead men lost their bones," and "the wind under the door," and "nothing again, nothing," show that this is not actually spoken, it is simply thought by the persona. And it could parallel how no one seems to hear Eliot's warnings of the wasteland that everyone seems to live in. The repetition in "nothing again, nothing" shows this sense of finality, this resigned sense of how everyone is simply trapped there unless there's this sense of change, such as in the change of Philomel mentioned in the poem. Finally, what can encapsulate the entire poem perhaps is the phrase, held up by standards wrought with fruited vines from which a golden Cupidon peeped out, another hid his eyes behind his wing. The mention of Cupids and golden shows the profusion of material things, and yet, because this Cupid is hiding behind his wing, it shows how pure symbols such as this Cupid, which represents love and purity, are hiding. They are not present within our world, within our wasteland, and hiding behind his wing represents the lack of interaction within the characters of this poem and within the wasteland in general.
Thank you very much, Aidan. We have about 4 minutes left to go, so we'll just ask you some questions, okay? The first one I think that I would like to ask is about the structure of this piece. What do you notice about the structure of this extract, and how might the structure here be related to Eliot's overall message?
Well, first of all, there is this long description full of quite long sentences that are drawn out. There's plenty of enjambment, and this is reflecting the this can emphasize the description of the materialism of their land, the profusion of wealth and richness, and therefore, there are hardly any full stops. There are plenty of caesuras to draw out the scene. However, there is a break in the structure, and then there is the shorter speeches, which are, as I mentioned before, short and one after the other, to reflect the desperation of the person who is saying this. It's this break in structure shows that there's a break between the supposed beauty of the scene and actually the real desperation of the people in it.
Okay, all right, thank you very much, good answer. The next thing I want to ask you about, one thing that you didn't talk about was the kind of the window. You spoke about the swirl of the perfume and stuff like that, but we see that the window is open and there's perfumes are stirred by air that freshen from the window, okay? What might you say about this symbol, the window, here?
The window is a symbol of the possible freedom and hope that is still there in the wasteland. This is a common theme throughout the different parts of the poem on Eliot. In his first part, The Burial of the Dead, it talks about this small life within the tubers, and this shows there is some hope for change. However, this hope is so small that it merely stirs the perfumes within the room, and it does not actually affect how much there is there. To be able to wreak some sort of phenomenal change, Eliot is saying that something bigger has to be done, such as opening the door or leaving the room itself.
Okay. You mentioned the burial of the dead. How do you think this part follows from the burial of the dead or leads us into what's to come later on? How does it fit within the poem as a whole?
Okay. This part shows how people who are seemingly happy and wealthy are actually still trapped, even though they cannot realize this. And the part that comes after this shows how people in even different socioeconomic status are similarly trapped, but just in a different way, not with wealth, but with the petty nuances of gossip. And later on, this lack of interaction is counteracted with interaction, but not true interaction, the shallow ones of lust and sex as opposed to true love. We can see parts of this in his lack of symbols of purity and love, and this is explored further on in the poem.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll stop there.
Thank you.
Okay, good. Well done.